Para X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Merry meet and merry parts, bright the cheeks and warm the heart. For tread the circle thrice about to keep unwelcome spirits out. Bide within the law you must, in perfect love. Mind the threefold laws you should, three times bad and three times good. These eight words the reed fulfill, and ye harm none, do what ye will.
Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron. Here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Merry meet, everybody, and welcome. Now, tonight's guest is Dr. Megan Rose, and we're going to be talking about her book, Spirit Marriage, Intimate Relationships with Otherworldly Beings. Now, Dr. Rose has a doctorate in East-West Psychology from the California Institute of Integral Studies and a master's degree in religion in society from the Graduate Theological Union. She's an initiated ceremonial magician, a Shakta tantric practitioner, and a senior seer in the House of Bree Fairy Seership Institute. She serves as an ordained interfaith minister and psycho-spiritual counselor, and is the executive director of the Entheosis Institute. And she lives up in San Francisco, and somebody in the chat room lives up in there too. All right. As usual, questions and comments from the chat room are always welcome. But you need to be in the chat room listening to the live show to do that. So if you're here tonight at this moment listening in, you can join us at paraxradionetwork.com. And if you're listening to the podcast and want to know when the live show is on, it's Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, and somewhere around 2 a.m. across the pond. And if you're anywhere else, I think I'll leave you to do the calculations. All right, Dr. Rose, welcome. We've got so much to talk about and so little time.
I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks for inviting me, Marla.
Oh, well, you know, it's a really interesting topic that I never gave a whole lot of thought to. And, you know, as we were talking about right before the show, everything I read lended itself to three more questions. And I was going a little bit crazy because I thought, oh, yeah, if I had all the questions done, we'd probably be here tomorrow night at the same time still doing it. So let's kind of jump in right now and get started. Now, spirit marriage has allegedly been with us since the dawn of time, and you've been studying it for 20 years, give or take, and you have practiced it as well. And so what exactly is spirit marriage?
Yeah, so spirit marriage, the best way that I can describe it, it's when a human and an extraordinary or otherworldly being develop a committed, usually lifelong and lifetime-long often, relationship that often involves a kind of rite or ritual enactment of the marriage, and is different a little bit from channeling or some other possessory types of spirit work, in that it is this deeply bonded and sometimes erotically inclined relationship. And what got me really interested in it was a few different things. One was in seminary. We had, when I was at the Graduate Theological Union, we had sort of studied some of the Enochian texts on the Genesis account, when the sons of God came to the daughters of men and saw them fair and took unto them wives, I think is something along the lines of how the text goes, and spawned the Nephilim and all these interesting hybrid beings. And so I remembered that from my days in seminary, and then later on would encounter it again in my studies of comparative religion. I'm a religious studies scholar, and found it in the Vodou tradition, found it in the sacred marriage rites, really transculturally all around the globe. And then, as you mentioned, what kind of kicked off the inquiry in earnest was when I started having my own encounters with the spirit that wanted to marry me. And I thought, I've heard about this, but I have no idea, no idea what's going on here. And that's really when I began to research it diligently.
Well, yeah, and you began the book by saying that this is kind of a love story disguised as a piece of scholarly research. Mm-hmm. So which came first, the love story or the research?
Gosh, that is a great question. That's a little bit of a chicken egg question. I mean, what I will say is that as I share in my story chapter in the book, I was raised in the Pentecostal tradition, and I was from a very, very early age experiencing the indwelling of the Holy Spirit, which later I would really come to identify as this sort of the feminine face, the goddess, the feminine face of God or goddess, which now I sort of orient around the idea of the Shakti or wisdom Sophia, but this sort of indwelled spirit that was very much me and a part of me, but also greater than me. So that sense of intimacy has sort of always been there. And then as I, you know, matured, left the Pentecostals, began sort of to step onto the pagan path and encountered other spirits, the spirit lover began to emerge. And so it was always this sort of parallel inquiry for me, because, you know, I had heard of the story of the angels and humans mating in graduate school. Mm-hmm. And then later, some 10 odd years later, would start experiencing or having encounters of that myself, which then, you know, being a scholar, put my researcher hat on and, you know, really started trying to dig deep. And 20 years ago, there was not a lot out there on the internet. You can find more, you know, to varying degrees of accuracy. You can find information out there now. A lot of it is more fantasy based, which is lovely and has its place, but is not, you know, what I was looking for, which was like, what are the practices and the lineages and the traditions that actually take this as a sacred and holy and integral part of their spiritual tradition?
I was just kind of surprised at first to find out some people that I really know have had spirit marriages, and blew my mind. I mean, it's not something I guess that everybody talks about, but I'm like, wow, that was really strange. You know, that they didn't mention it before. But so what other types of otherworldly spirits are you referring to? Because some people are saying it's just, you know, somebody that passed away, but it runs a whole gamut of possibilities, right?
Yeah, it absolutely does. I use the term spirits just because it's the sort of most generic umbrella term that I can think of that that gets at the idea that these are not physical incarnate human beings right now. But that the people that I interviewed, it really, as you said, runs the gamut between deities, angels, beloved dead, fairy beings, in the African diaspora tradition, the Lwa in the Vodou tradition, elemental spirits, and on and on and on and on. I mean, I'm constantly encountering people who share with me their stories of, oh, you know, I have had this spirit union with a being. I thought I was the only one, or I thought I was losing my marbles when this spirit started showing up and kept wanting to marry me. I didn't know it was a thing. And honestly, Marla, that's why I wrote my book. I wrote my book for myself 20 years ago, like, because I couldn't find anything out there when I was having these encounters 20 years ago, that could help guide me, other than a little bit of research or a little bit of material by Ida Craddock, who was an early sexologist and spiritualist at the dawn of the 20th century that had written about this. So she kind of gave me a little bit of information from a treatise she wrote called Heavenly Bridegrooms. And then I was kind of off to the races trying to find all the different traditions that practiced this to help me understand what I was experiencing. So, you know, I went around asking and interviewing a whole bunch of different people that were practitioners in a well-respected tradition about their own relationships to try and figure out my own. And then I put it all into a book so that folks that are having these encounters and experiences can have the guidance that I wished I would have had 20 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, I've not heard a lot about it before this. And, you know, with all the guests I've had on my show over the years and everything, you would think that that would have come up, but it just kind of took me by surprise that I knew very little, if nothing, about this. Because, well, okay, here's what some people might think, that in the paranormal realm, sometimes having an intimate relationship with an otherworldly being falls under the incubus-succubus category, you know, which starts out very gently and very sweetly and then turns into a nightmare. And since most spirit marriages seem to be undertaken at the request of the spirit who wishes to co-create with a human, how can a person know the difference between the two?
Well, I think it really starts with, first of all, our understanding of why we're entering into these kinds of relationships. Most of these spirits don't present, most of these spirits that are wanting a kind of bonded relationship with a human to that degree don't at the outset start with what we would call eroticism or sex, right? They're not just there to get it on with us. They usually, like any relationship, we would hopefully like be wanting to develop a getting to know you, a dating phase, right? With the spirit, where we're getting to know them and where there is this sort of interest that is expressed. But it's often in the more structured traditions, the spirit doesn't actually propose to the human, or if they are proposing to the human, they are also sort of tapping the elder or the spiritual guide of that person and saying, I want to marry this person. For example, my mentor, Orion Foxwood, who founded the House of Brie Fairy Seership Institute, he had met his fairy wife, Brie, through some ritual and journey work that he had been doing with one of his mentors, R.J. Stewart. And he thought Brie was just this powerful fairy being, and they had a sort of what you would consider sort of a guide relationship. She was kind of guiding him and giving him information about ecological reparation and some land that he was working with. And one of his mentors, Dolores Ashcroft Nowicki, was visiting him, and Brie appeared to Dolores and said, basically, I want to marry Orion. And so Orion, you know, wasn't even thinking of the fairy marriage. I mean, he knew about it folklorically, but it wasn't on his radar. And he hadn't really even considered that could be a possibility for him. But Brie appeared to Dolores, and Dolores was like, Orion, you've got to marry her. She's loves you so much, and this is such a powerful connection. And Dolores herself is an indwelled seer. Mm-hmm. And so there was this kind of, you know, Orion says it was a little bit like a shotgun wedding where, you know, she was like, you got to marry her. And that's not uncommon. And many of the folks that I talked to, there was someone that was either their spiritual teacher or mentor that the spirit came to. And this actually happens in the Vodou tradition as well, where often the Mambo or the Ungan recommend the marriage to one of the servitors, one of the people in their community, because that marrying that loa will bring a certain quality to the house that's needed, this balancing quality. So it's really the mechanics of it are different than, you know, what I would say the incubus succubus is more of like a one night stand or a hookup or something that is sort of coming on to you and taking something from you. Whereas these co-creative relationships with otherworldly beings have a really different flavor and a really different energy to them. But there's also a really, for folks that don't have a context with a community and an elder where they can, you know, discern for them, there's a tremendous amount of responsibility on the shoulder of the practitioner to develop the discernment, the discipline, and ultimately decide if they'd want to devote themselves to this kind of a bonded relationship with that spirit. And it just takes time. It takes time to discern who the spirit is. And this is why, you know, I wrote the research that I wrote and worked on took me almost 20 years, because I was spending my time really discerning who this spirit was, because I didn't have the community. I didn't have the person that could validate at first. Later on, you know, when I began to study with Orion, I went and had readings and divinations with him where he was able to validate the spirit and we were able to get really clear. Mm-hmm. But for folks that don't have the community, it sort of behooves you to really develop the discipline muscle and the discernment muscle to know who you're talking to, what their agenda is, and really be able to like work as your own bouncer. If it's like a spirit you don't want to be working with, then, you know, you need to be able to like, and that's why I studied ceremonial magic and initiated into ceremonial magic, so I could get really good at defining my personal space and not have, you know, it impinged upon by whatever spirit was floating by.
Yeah. Got a couple of chat room questions, so let me get to this. Yeah, we still got time before the break. All right. We have what she calls a complicated question. So it says, how is this different than, say, a ritual marriage with the divine feminine, such as Templar or Rosicrucian? She said, I would guess that nuns would make the same commitment with their marriage, because, yes, yeah, nuns marry God or Jesus, one of the two. Mm? Yeah. So, how is this different than other kinds of ritual marriages in the divine feminine?
I am not familiar with the Rosicrucian ritual to the divine marriage to the divine feminine, but I did research and cite the Brides of Christ, the nun tradition, and for all intents and purposes, I don't think it is different. It is, in essence, taking a vow of devotion. Just like you take a vow of devotion to the human person, you know, that you marry. It's a vow to be in deep bonded relationship with them. And it can look as different as human relationships look, right? Not every deeply bonded, intimate human relationship is marriage or ends in marriage. Not all marriages involve eroticism and sex, right? Like, we know throughout history that there have been marriages for all sorts of different reasons that people get married. So it really looks as different. Can look as different from culture to culture, from person to person, and from relationship to relationship, based on what your relationship design is. And really, the ultimate aim, I think, of spirit marriage is some sort of co-creative partnership. So many of these, the folks that I interviewed and the research that I did, the examples of spirit marriage were occurring because there was some sort of project that the human and the otherworldly being needed to co-create together and couldn't be brought through into the physical without that co-creation. R.J. Stewart says, we do things that they can't, and they do things that we can't, and we come together and do something, can do something really fabulous, really, really remarkable. And I won't go into all of the stories of Plato and the daemon, but this idea of our genius is connected to the tutelary spirits and in some cases the bonded spirits. I'll give you one quick example. King Numa of Rome, he was in a spirit marriage with Egeria, which was a nymph, and she came and gave him counsel, told him who to talk to, was an intermediary with some of the other Roman deities, and she also gave him the first, he was the first Sabine king of Rome, and she gave him the first laws that became the law of Rome at the time. She sort of like helped him co-create that. So there, here is the example of this whole Roman Empire that is like founded or predicated on this intimate relationship between a king and his spirit wife.
I mean, it's so many, you know, you start talking and then more things come in your head, you know, it's really kind of unnerving in a really good way. But, you know, you were talking about spirit guides and stuff. And there was a question earlier in the chat room. Do spirit guides and angel guardians count as getting involved with the people that they're supposedly watching over and taking care of?
Yeah, so I think that's kind of a two-part question. One is, can a spirit guide or a guardian angel become a spirit spouse? And I think the answer is probably yes. I mean, I didn't research anybody. Well, yes, because Orion had said, you know, Bree was a guide for him for a while, and he thought that was the extent of their relationship, and then she proposed marriage. So, and that was because that she wanted to them, the two of them, to co-create the House of Bree, the Fairy Seership Institute, and his whole teaching system of fairy seership came through, which is rooted in folkloric fairy tradition, but is also this sort of unique system that Dolores Ashcroft Nowishki sort of dubbed it the Kabbalah of the Dark Goddess. It's this very powerful underworld tradition and teaching system that Bree essentially birthed through Orion. So there's an example of a guide that becomes a spirit spouse at some point in that relationship. But not all guides we don't need to marry our tutelary spirits. We don't need to marry our guardian angels necessarily. But there may come a point in that relationship where it's appropriate. And usually that is precipitated by the spirit, not by the human. But, you know, in the case of deity yoga and worshiping a god or a goddess, we can absolutely fall in love with deity, right? We can love a deity and woo the deity. You know, I have clients and students who are so in love with their various devotional deities and have, you know, sort of wooed them and created a kind of marriage, a ritual for themselves with the deity that they are devoted to, because that practice is what they feel like is the natural next step for their devotional relationship.
Yeah, I was thinking about spirit guides and protectors and stuff as you were talking. And I would think, and that's just me, that our guides are there to kind of help us, keep us out of mischief, guide us. And they can't exactly, well, they know us better than we know ourselves. Let's give them that credit. But to get involved with them, then that might tarnish their work in the beginning. I mean, why they are our guides? Because they're kind of one step away. You know, they're trying to keep us okay. And then all of a sudden, if we're in a relationship with them, that kind of might move things into a different realm. And, you know, that, I don't know. Does that make sense?
Well, I think that it's the function, right? What is the function of a guide versus what is the function of your spouse? You know, what is the function of a friend or a mentor or protector versus what is the function of your spouse? And in a lot of these marriages, the relationship, the spousal relationship is a kind of seasoning. It's something that you yourself are not necessarily on your own capable of doing, and you come together to create something unique. Sometimes it's called the love child or the magical child of this this bonded, committed relationship. And that's different than, you know, a being that you're working with that is giving you counsel, although spirit spouses are known to give counsel to their partners. But it is a different level of commitment. I mean, let's back up here and say that spirit marriages require a tremendous amount of time and energy and commitment on the part of the human. And you don't necessarily have to do that if you've got a guide, right? You don't, you don't have to, in the Vodou tradition, they have to devote anywhere from 1 to 2 nights a week, to, depending on how many different, so this is where we get into the polyamory aspect of it, because in the Vodou tradition and in others traditions, you can be married to more than one Lua, and you would spend anywhere up from 1 to 3 nights a week with that spirit companion, doing a specific ritual where you spend that evening communing with them. And so, and then you are required to have rituals and fetes and different things that celebrate that that spirit union, and it can be costly. You know, you're paying for the marriage, and then you're upholding the spirit for the community, the being for that community, and so it's not necessarily just a I'm going to tune into my guides and see what my guides have to say. It is a, like, if you're married to somebody and you don't talk to them every day, or you don't spend some time on a regular basis with your, for example, like in a human relationship, that relationship really falters and doesn't tend to thrive. And it's the same thing with your spirit partner. The human really has to step up and spend a devotional time with their spirit beloved, you know, every day, really getting to know them and spending time with them. So it's a level of commitment that the human takes on in the marriage that is really functionally different than how you would interact with a guide or a guardian angel type being.
Yeah, because somebody in the chat room wrote, well, she said, the issue I have here is that you don't marry your therapist, kind of thing. And that makes sense. And I guess that was probably what I was trying to say and didn't get it out quite so succinctly. But yeah. But then she also said, but that goes back to, what are you calling marriage? Is it devotion to, or commitment in absence of a physical being? I mean, there's, you know, all kinds of factors entering in, right?
Yeah. I mean, again, in the traditions that I researched, it is a ceremonial practice that is part of that lineage. It's part of that teaching system. And it is done to, they use the term marriage because that is the, and I use the term marriage because that's the closest thing that helps us understand the level of lifelong commitment that you are making to be with this spirit, and they have your back and you have their back. And there is a deeply bonded union that happens between the two of you. I mean, in some traditions, they call it an indwelling. Orion describes it as when he opens his eyes, Bree sees into his world. And when he closes his eyes, he sees into her world. And so there is this almost like a symbiosis or a hybridic consciousness that happens with the indwelled seer. And that's not necessarily the case for every single spirit marriage practitioner, but it absolutely shows up enough for us to understand that, you know, it is, there's a different quality. And like all relationships, there's a spectrum of gradation of levels of commitment. And, you know, there are people that married that live in separate locations, right? Mm-hmm. Human people.
Yeah.
And so really it's the, how do you want to define the relationship? Have you made this level of commitment? You know, there's a highly ritualized aspect to this and most of these traditions where vows are exchanged, a community is there witnessing the nuptials, rings are exchanged. They're in the Vodou tradition, they get married wedding clothes and they make a cake, and it's a whole fete, it's a whole to-do. Mm-hmm. And that is what cements the ritual for both the human and the community that really witnesses and upholds that marriage. And then they have certain jobs then within the community that they have to perform as a result of marrying that, you know, that being, that loa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, we, yeah, it's time to take a break. So everybody stay with us and we'll be back in the blink of an eye.
Stirring the Cauldron will be right back. So don't go away.
If you end up with webbed feet,
remember, you've been warned.
Explore the second edition of the Witch's Oracle Deck through 45 innovative cards and enhanced guidebook that peers into the world of the witch. The deck's stunning artwork has a new look and includes 7 brand new inspirational cards. Each card now includes a suggested crystal or gemstone to enhance your reading, as well as a magical incantation that provides energy, reinforces the card's meaning, and helps the desired message to be sent out into the universe. The easy-to-navigate guide also has a new look and offers straightforward, gentle guidance that takes readers through both good times and bad. And now includes a chapter on crystal and gemstone divination by the amazing Nicholas Pearson. The Witch's Oracle. It is a perfect divination deck for witches as well as non-pagans, and is designed to suit both seasoned readers and beginners alike. Find out more about the Witch's Oracle deck at www.marlabrooks.com, and you can purchase the deck from shifferbooks.com, amazon.com, or order a copy from your favorite bookseller.
New Aeon Now. News and discussion of the metaphysical, the occult, the paranormal, and much, much more. With your hosts, New Aeon High Priestess Reverend Lily Alley, head of the Draken chapter of the Order of Paranormal Exploration, Christine Matza. The New Aeon is now. Join us every Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern for New Aeon Now.
Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
And my guest tonight is Dr. Megan Rose, and we're talking about her book, Spirit Marriages, Intimate Relationships with Otherworldly Beings. I'm just going to start throwing more questions at you right now because they're coming in all over the place. So how would somebody know if they were being contacted by an otherworldly spirit for that purpose?
Oh, for that purpose, for the purpose of spirit marriage. Well, typically that's, they propose. In my case, I was having, I was sort of what I like to call pagan light. You know, I was exploring, I had a background in spirituality and esotericism, and I was beginning to kind of explore witchcraft and shamanism and as those doors of perception began to be open and I sort of lit up on the spirit realm, various spirits began to be kind of attracted to me and deities. And I began to, you know, do different kinds of workings. And then a spirit began to show up. For me, it was mostly in my dreams. This spirit being would show up and I would have this very specific somatic or body response to that spirit's presence. And it was like it would light me up like a Christmas tree, and I could feel this sense of heart opening, and the whole central channel of my body would just come online, and it was like the hairs on my body would stand on end when I was having these encounters. And and in my case, they were very erotic, but they were erotic, not in the sense of like being drained, but more along the sense of this idea of being initiated or filled or activated. There was this transmission that was happening, which I won't go into the different sort of quantum mechanics of sexuality, but there's a facet of this which is like really understanding what's going on energetically during erotic encounters, both with ourselves, with spirits, and with other humans. There's a very tantric aspect to a lot of this, suffice it to say. But in my case, it was this spirit that my body had this very strong response to. And eventually the spirit said, you know, marry me. And I was like, what? You know, I had no reference for it, like I said. And but the same dream and the same spirit and the same request came repeatedly. And I was like, well, I don't know who you are. I don't know what cosmology you're from. I know I have this very strong response to you that is lovely, but I'm not just going to marry you or say yes or whatever until I really do my due diligence. And that's kind of what set me on this exploratory journey. So typically we know a spirit wants to marry us because it proposes and it makes its intentions clear either to us or to somebody that we know, love, and trust and respect. And that directive kind of comes through them.
Yeah. And you know, one of the other, we talked about the otherworldly beings, but one thing that I was thinking about, and I was kind of peeking in on one of your YouTube things. And you talk about that some of these spirits might be somebody that you were with in a previous lifetime. And, you know, you might keep missing them here on the earth plane back and forth. But talk about that for a minute, because I think that makes so much sense. And 'cause I think sometimes two people get parted and they don't come back at the same times, but they're, you know, you're always joined together emotionally. So,
absolutely. Well, you know, that sort of comes up. I've had folks ask me, well, is this maybe a twin flame thing or a soulmate kind of thing? And, when we're talking about, a beloved dead, let's use the example of someone who is an ancestral spirit or a spirit that was once in human form. And if we're looking at it through a reincarnational lens, we may have beings, people that we were married to in past lives that we have incarnated in this life and they didn't, for whatever reason, reincarnate right away. And sometimes our deep longing for that being, for that person, that it seems like no other relationship can quench, is actually us reaching through to that spirit being. And sometimes that spirit being finds us and we are able to continue that, you know, relationship through the auspices of spirit marriage. So we may have known them in a past life. We may have been married to them incarnate in a past life, or we may have been a devotee of theirs. So in the example of the Shakta Tantric in my book, here is a very highly initiated tantric practitioner who is married to the goddess Kali. And when I interviewed her, Kama, she said that she felt like she had been with Kali lifetime after lifetime, and that she had been a wife or a devotee of Kali's for many lifetimes, and that when Kali claimed her again in this life and they married again in this life, it was in some ways marriage vowel renewal for work that they had done together for many lifetimes.
And that's really romantic. It really is, because and it could be like two people that came so close to getting married and one of them passed away and they never got to fulfill that promise, you know? And so, yeah, that's just really interesting. How would someone benefit by being in a spirit marriage?
Well, you know, as I said, they do things that we can't do. Usually these kinds of spirit marriages come, like I said, at the behest of the spirit or because that there's some sort of fulfillment, some sort of co-creative project that wants to come out. For example, in my case, it was this book. It was all of this research. There was the spirit that was wanting to marry me, which sort of sent me on this, you know, inquiry in the first place. And that spirit became a kind of guiding and tutelary spirit for many years as I was doing this research, nudging me in one direction or another, creating synchronicities for who I would interview and who I would bring into the research process. And so I think that oftentimes there are creative projects like books, which have come out of a number of these, but there's also community projects and there are ecological projects. There are things that these unions bring to ourselves and to our communities that give us an expanded sense of who we are as humans on this planet at this time. We live, it brings to us the perspective of living in an animist or an animated universe, and of which, you know, we are but a small fractal. We're a small part of all of the various intelligences that live on this planet with us, right? From the tiniest bacteria that we can't even really see with a naked eye, all the way out to the cosmic influences and everything in between. And we no longer look at the world around us as, you know, what can I take or use or what advantages can I get? But like, how can I co-create? How can I be in participatory relationship with the various strata of being around beings around me? And I feel like these spirit marriages really are sort of the vanguard of that kind of animist re-enchanted view of the world.
Mm-hmm. And these marriages are not just with single people. I mean, lots of people are married to someone, a real person, and then they also have a marriage to a spirit, right?
Yeah, so I would say a human person, an incarnate human person, because that these otherworldly beings are very real, right? They're real people too.
Yeah.
You know, they're married to a physical person and they're married to a spirit being. So there's kind of a polyamory being practiced, whether they identify as polyamorous or not. But yeah, there were plenty of people that I interviewed that held both types of relationship. And you know, one of my interviewees, Madrone, who practices in the Dagara tradition that comes out of Burkina Faso, West Africa, she is married to a tree spirit, Tingan, who Tingan is like the masculine spirit of earth that governs justice and discernment and tends to like to manifest through some kind of a tree. And so they have a whole ritual to install or to turn a tree that they divine is an appropriate tree into a shrine to Tingan. And then she has this sort of relationship with the tree as a proxy for her marriage to Tingan. So she has that relationship. Her husband, who is also an elder in the Dogara community, has his own marriages to other spirits within that tradition, within that cosmology. And so, you know, and then they're part of a larger community where there's a variety of people in that community married to all kinds of different spirits. And in his case, he's married to spirits called the Kintombe, which he does divination work. So there's a divinatory practice that is part of the marriage to those spirits. So, you know, hearkening back to the question you ask about what's the purpose of these, often these, the purpose of the marriage to a spirit is because that you are being asked by your community to step into a certain kind of gift or a certain kind of offering that you can bring either to your community or to the planet that is, you know, that is creative, but also may involve divination or blessing or guidance that you and the spirit, you become the proxy for that spirit's presence in the physical.
Mm-hmm. So it's not, well, you would think it would be complicated, you know, and there would be jealousy on both sides. But I guess, you know, there are ground rules and everything gets set up before that happens. And I guess you can live happily ever after and not have to worry, right?
I mean, yeah, yes and no. There are cases where, you know, in Orion's case, he shares a story where he had a human partner. And when he married Bree, that was kind of like, that was the end of their relationship with his human partner at the time, because he said, you know, I've shared you with your coven and with all these other communities, and now I have to share you with the spirit that is inside of you that I can't compete with. And he said it was, you know, it was not something that the spirit intended or that he intended, but it was sort of a side effect of the marriage. However, yeah. Then, you know, re-brought into his life another relationship, and he has a human, you know, fiance now that they're deeply in love and couldn't imagine being with Orion. He says, Sethlyn couldn't imagine being with me without Bree being a part of me. It's so integral to who I am.
Yeah, no, that's really good. So Ken, this question from the chat room, can this happen to anyone, or is there a specific type that get contacted, like perhaps people who are more open-minded and metaphysically inclined or mediumistic or something? I mean, you know, will John Doe or Jane Doe just all of a sudden get contacted and not know anything about it?
Well, I think that's it's a great question. It's, you know, it's a little bit like, well, can everybody run, you know? But can everybody run a marathon, and can everybody win a marathon? You know, it's a little bit like nascent talent. Can everybody learn to play the piano, right? Mm-hmm. But can everybody become like a virtuoso pianist? You know, there's ability, and then there's talent. And one of my theories is that folks that do end up being contacted and called into spirit and marriage type relationships are somewhere on the spectrum of highly sensitive people. Mm-hmm. So there's all this lovely research out there about HSPs and highly sensitive people and the different qualities and of the HSP. And I think that a lot of folks that that do end up just in mediumship and spirit communication in general, you know, it's like spirit marriage in some ways is like mediumship and spirit communication cranked up to 11. But, you know, just to be doing spiritualist work or mediumship work or spirit communication work, one needs to have a certain amount of sensitivity. But, you know, as Frater Lux, one of my ceremonial magician friends that I interviewed for this, said, you know, ceremonial magic is designed to help sensitize you. If you don't get information, if you don't get contact, it's designed to help you get contact. But it's also designed, like I shared in my story, where if you're getting too much contact, contact, it's designed to sort of like turn the volume down a little bit and help you control it. So it really creates a nice cauldron or river banks for the flow of the contact to move within.
Mm-hmm. And you talk about your experience, but the book has seven chapters on each individual who does have a spirit marriage.
Yeah, I interviewed 9 different practitioners in 7 different traditions.
Definitely, I got to 7 somewhere along the line.
Yeah, 7 different traditions. And across the board, you know, all across the and traditions that are run the gamut across the global spectrum. And I begin the book by rooting it in historical and anthropological and folkloric literature, you know, that I went into the library and did all this research looking for accounts that are there in both, anthropologists that have studied this in China and India and Africa and, you know, Ireland and all these different places. And then, you know, what really was driving the research was that I wasn't just interested in, like, the dusty annals of history. I wanted to know who was practicing it today and mm-hmm. why. So I did research and interviewed these contemporary practitioners of spirit marriage. And then I include my own story in there as one of the chapters as well.
Mm-hmm. And you've also included a chapter towards the end on practices and precautions. You want to give us a little hint about what that's all about?
Yeah. So, you know, what are the things that, say you are being contacted by a spirit wanting to marry you, you need to know kind of what to do about that and how to manage it, or say this is something that feels really juicy for you and intuitively you feel sort of like this, you're being drawn to this idea of stepping into a spirit marriage. So I wanted to include some practices and guidelines for that as well. And what I like to say is that, you know, we may not all be asked by a external otherworldly being to marry them, but each of us have a divine self that we are a part of. And in my research, I include the knowledge and conversation with our divine self as a kind of spirit marriage, not maybe the way that we think of marriage traditionally, but, you know, there are people that have decided to marry themselves and to put their own spiritual awakening and spiritual embodiment of their highest and best self as their primary relationship in their life. And whether they do that for a time or whether they do that for their life is, you know, entirely up to them. But we, each of us, have a divine self that is actionable that we can reach to. And so when I talked to the ceremonial magician Frater Lux about that ritual, the knowledge and conversation with the Holy Guardian Angel ritual that comes out of some forms of ceremonial magic, he said it's not that marriage to the HGA, the Holy Guardian Angel, is an inaccurate term. It's just that we have all these preconceived ideas about what marriage is that make it a less ideal languaging to use around that. But when one steps into a deeply bonded, intimate relationship with their divine self, I personally classify that as a form of spirit marriage. And everybody can do that. Everybody can reach to their divine self and step into knowledge and an actionable relationship with that aspect of themselves.
I'm glad you brought that up because I had that was going to be your next question.
Yeah.
Reading my mind.
Yeah.
So you say that bonded relationships with spirits are needed now more than ever. Why is that?
Well, I think it has to do with where we are as a species on the planet right now. I'm a big fan of Barbara Marx Hubbard's research of conscious evolution. And, you know, the core of conscious evolution is that we have evolved as a species unconsciously, sort of haphazardly for the past, you know, however many millennia. And we're at this sort of tipping point as a species. She calls it, you know, she says that we shifted from Homo erectus to Homo sapien, right? And we don't really know what it was that was the tipping point, right, that shifted our species into being self-aware Homo sapien. I like to think, and I think that some of the literature points to this, that it may have been these interceding entities, otherworldly beings that came and helped precipitate the expansion of our consciousness so that we became self-aware Homo sapiens. But we're in a similar transition point as a species where we have the potential to step into what Hubbard and others call Homo universalis or Homo spiritus, where we are not only self-aware, but we are aware of each other. We're aware of our embeddedness, as I was talking about earlier, in our beautiful planet, in Gaia consciousness. And how we get to that awareness, I believe spirit marriage is one of the key technologies for that. Caroline Kenner, who is one of my interviewees and is married to a constellation of spirits, said that our ability to become psychically sensitive and communicate with otherworldly beings is going to be as key for us moving forward as a species as being able to verbalize and communicate between our shift from Homo erectus to Homo sapien. So that was sort of one of the big key jumps is that all of a sudden we were able to make words and make language. And now our ability to be telepathic and our ability to be sensitive and tune into the otherworldly realms that we are constantly embedded in, but sometimes oblivious to, is going to be a key factor in us evolving to whatever our species is going to be as we go forward as a planet. And that, I think, is what will help safeguard that our humanity kind of survives, right, on the planet. Mm-hmm. Because we're at a really critical time where humanity might not survive.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, just as I expected, we've got more questions and time to answer them. So before we go, can you give out your website information for those who want to find out more about you, your books, your courses, spirit marriages, or even the Entheosis Institute?
Yeah. So Entheosis, really quickly, is Entheos, Divine Within, and that is a nonprofit organization that I have started with with my partners to teach about this idea of awakening the divine within that I was talking about earlier, the divine mm-hmm. self. But so you can go to Dr. Megan Rose, which is just Megan Rose, .com. And I have information about my practice and my book and the courses that I offer. I have spiritmarriage.com, which just went live and is specifically dedicated to the book, which is coming out on April the 5th. And you can learn more about it on that website. And I do have a spirit marriage self-study course, which will be coming out around the same time the book comes out, so folks can sort of get a really strong grounding in spirit marriage teachings and practices. It's self-study, so it's self-paced, and you can go at your own pace and take as long as you want. And then the Entheosis Institute, the website is Entheosis, Entheosis.org. You can learn more about the various offerings we have there.
Great. Well, thank you for joining us tonight. Chat room is saying very interesting guest and very good topic. So this is good. And I want to thank everybody for listening in as well. And until next time, everybody, blessed be and merry meet again. Good night.
This has been another edition of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Be sure to tune in next week at the same time for another great guest and more fun. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2009.
You have been listening to the Para-X Radio Network.